from stpetecatalyst.com.
Hi, I'm Bill DeYoung, checking that the red light's on because I haven't done this in a while. But welcome to the St. Pete Catalyst. I am honored and just so happy to be speaking to L. Peter Callender, who you see up there, I think on the left side of your screen. There he is. And Ted Lang. Now, Mr. Callender is starring in Satchmo at the Waldorf, Terry Teachout's play. It's a one-man show that is opening virtually at American Stage Friday, next Friday the 19th. We're also speaking with the director, who is Ted Lang. Hello, Ted.
How you doing?
All right. You guys are both in California right now, am I correct?
That's correct. Right. We're on the best coast. I mean, west coast.
I love technology. I have a little intro written down, which will be probably the only thing I read today. Okay. And I don't have my glasses, but I think I can read my writing. Ted Lang, let's start with you, is a graduate of London's Royal Academy of Dramatic Arts. He has an extensive resume of acting, playwriting, and directing for the stage, for film, and for television. He's written 22 plays, is an acknowledged expert and lecturer on the works of William Shakespeare, it gets better, and the recipient of numerous awards, including the Renaissance Man Theater Award from the Los Angeles NAACP. Man. And I saved this for last, as we always do, because you may remember that Ted spent 10 years playing Isaac on the Love Boat.
Yes, hopefully.
There he
you
is.
Remember, yeah.
But we're here to talk about Satchmo at the Waldorf, and Peter Callender, of course, is known to American stage audiences for directing. You directed Skeleton Crew last year, which was brilliant.
Thank you. Yeah, Skeleton Crew, Pipeline.
And Pipeline too. That's right. We talked about that.
Yeah.
And you were in Between Riverside and Crazy.
I acted in Between Riverside and Crazy. Directed Raisin in the Sun, Jitney. Yeah, it's, I love American stage. I love my American stage audiences. Hello, everybody.
I love that Raisin in the Sun, man. Ina King is just my favorite. And he was in,
I agree.
In Skeleton Crew too. Peter, I have your resume here. You're also an actor, writer, and director. Over 30 years experience. You received your formal training at the Juilliard School in New York City and at London's Webber Douglas Academy. Currently in your 21st season at the California Shakespeare Theater. And I wrote all this stuff about how you're well-known to American stage audiences, which we already talked about. So there goes that. We're talking about Satchmo at the Waldorf. But first, I need one of you or both of you to do the 6 degrees of separation thing with me. How do you guys know each other?
Ted, you want to start or should I get into it?
No, you do it. You do it. That's fine.
Okay, first of all, let me correct one thing. I'm also the artistic director of African American Shakespeare Company, giving my theater company some plugs.
And well, no longer in the thing I read, of course. I knew that. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm no longer at California Shakespeare Theater.
I read an old bio. Oh, wow.
That's an older one, but that's got a Cal Shakes, one of my favorite homes. So about years ago, I had the honor of being invited to a screening of Ted's film production of Othello.
Yes.
And I was there with a bunch of very notable actors and writers. And Ted, of course, came out and spoke to us about what he was doing and why he did it. And just he wanted our thoughts about it. And I looked around, kind of like what Satchmo says in Satchmo at the Waldorf. I looked around and I said, what am I doing here? Right? What am I doing in this place? And there was this very talented man in front of me. Introducing his show and asking us our opinion. And that's when I first met Ted. And we've gone our separate ways. You know, he's done a few little things in his career, you know.
right.
And then, but when American Stage offered me this, I thought, ah, no, Ted is too busy. Let me not even. And I thought of directors, and I said, you know what? All he can do is ask. Just ask. Mm-hmm. And I called him up and we had a great conversation. And he says, I know that play. I love that play. Yes, I'd love to do that play. That's my best Ted Lang impression. I love that play. I want to, oh my God, I know stories about Louis Armstrong.
That's
enthusiastic.
You know, Bill, Peter and I are really brothers, you know, and we have a simpatico. We're on the same page on so many things. And that's what we uncovered as we did Satchmo. You know, he would hit me with stuff and then I would hit him with stuff. And we were always on the same page. And I always say that as a director, you have to recognize when an actor is right on the money and when you need to either, you know, push him or suggest things to him to get him where you need him to go. And I found myself, and you can't let your ego override you. You have to look at the project. And I was so pleased that Peter was doing this because he's absolutely brilliant.
Oh,
he's absolutely brilliant. He does Miles Davis. He does the manager, Joe Glazer, and he does Satchmo. And I'm telling you, it is so fantastic. And I just wanted to relate this one little thing. We were doing a scene with where he was holding the picture of his mother. I said, listen, in the scene, you know, Pete, I want you to hold the picture of the mother. And then you use this to relate to the mother. And he said, Ted, well, I thought that maybe this other scene, you know, is a better place for me to hold a picture of that. Wow. And I went, and when it's so clear, you have to go with it, you know?
Simon, you don't know everything is what you found out.
And you can't let your ego override, you know?
Yeah.
You have to trust your actor. And that's what Peter and I did. We trusted each other. You know, he would say, well, you know, this is what I feel. And I would explain why I thought it was this. And then he would trust me. You know, he said, oh, okay. Yeah. And then we would go on from there. But we were really on the same page to bringing to fruition the life of Satchmo. And he did absolutely brilliant job.
Thank you, Ted. Thank you, my friend, for that. And the trust goes both ways. I feel that I was able to trust Ted enough to say, Ted, can we rethink this moment? Because in my work last night, preparing for the scene, I realized that, this moment here, it needs this. And Ted will be like, oh, yeah, let's try it, of course. And then when we do it, Ted would say, oh, that was perfect. I'm so glad we did it that way.
Yeah.
You make me think that the two of you, as both actors and directors, are used to being right all the time. And how that's amazing that you were able to work, and it's not amazing you were able to work together, but to sort of, and for the good of the piece is what I'm saying.
Well, Bill, directing, producing is all collaborative, right? And Ted will agree with that. It's all collaborative. You're giving the nod to direct or to act in a show, and then you have a team of players with you. When Ted is doing Love Boat or any other great projects he's done, there are numerous people in front of him, behind him, to the side of him, to guide his work and to guide his attention to detail and certain things, right? Yeah. He's at the helm, yes, right? But it's a collaborative thing. So when Ted would say, yeah, let's try this. Peter, I know it's kind of strange. Try it for me. And I would try it to the best of my ability. And then I would say, gosh darn it, man, you're right. You're right.
Every time.
It's not about being right all the time, though. It's about allowing those moments to share with your team. And I think we have that symbiotic relationship as brothers, yes, but as co-workers and as colleagues as well.
As artists, well, yes. Yes.
Let's certainly talk about this piece. Now, Satchmo at the Waldorf takes place in, I want to say, 1971?
Yes. 71.
Mm-hmm. Not long before Louis Armstrong passed away. And
6 months before.
Okay, so he is looking back on his life.
Yes.
And good, bad, ugly, glorious.
Good, bad, ugly, and different.
Everything.
Yep, yep. He's, you know, he's dying. It's 1971. It's 6 months before he passes. He's playing at the Waldorf, right? His manager, Joe Glazer, who guided him from a young man for 40 years, guided him. Told him what to do, when to do it, who to do it with, right? Sent him down south when down south was a hotbed of racism and lynchings. Yeah. And he sent him down there, and Louis went down there as brave as he. So we talk about, you know, the fact, and when we first see him, he's not well. But the energy of telling his life story perks him up. And we see all these characters emerge. And we hear the story about how he met his wife and how he loved his mother and his father and his father's disappearance from the home and growing up and being, you know, what happened to him when he was 7 years old. When he met his first wife, his second wife, when he went up to Chicago, his musical influences, right? What the horn means to him. Yeah. We learned so much about him, right? And that's what Satchmo the Waldorf is all about. And 6 months later, you know, we lose him. He's taken from us. But we are so glad that we learned this about this incredible innovator. The word cat. When musicians talk about cat, yo, man, yeah. I love that cat.
Yeah.
Satchmo Armstrong created that.
Hey, man, did you just do the voice, Peter?
Oh my God, yeah. I just it pops in the case. Hello, everybody.
Okay. Thank you. I was going to ask if you would do that. So cool. So you also play Joe Glazer, and the scenes that I've seen on YouTube from other productions, and from what I've read, I mean, Joe Glazer was kind of looking out for Joe Glazer in a lot of cases, right? Am I, you know, like Satchmo never came to his home for dinner, and
right.
You know, what's that all about? And this is all true.
Absolutely true, and I want Ted to address this because my friend Ted has enlightened me about that aspect of his life. So Ted,
my dad was an actor, mm-hmm. and when I got Love Boat, my dad said to me, he says, because when I did a series called That's My Mama, and I was over the top on That's My Mama, and he said, listen, you're the only black person on Love Boat, so you don't have to go over the top.
Mm.
You know, you were in a room full of a bunch of black actors, and you had to separate yourself and come up with a characterization. He says, in this show, Love Boat, you don't have to do that, and you'll never have to worry about your boss coming to your house. And I said, wow. What do you mean, Dad? He said, well, your boss will never... You're black. Your boss will never come to your house. And I said, I didn't believe him. Okay. So for the next 10 years that I did Love Boat, I would send out invitations and the cast would come over to my house or the crew. When I did my first directorial thing, the crew and the cast, everybody came over to my house to celebrate. My boss never came over.
Are we talking about Aaron Spelling here?
Aaron Spelling
yeah.
and Doug Kramer
wow.
never set foot in my house. And I go, wow. And it turns out that's a black-white thing, you know? And I was never aware of it, but my father made me aware of this fact. He said, look, you don't ever have to worry about this and that and so on and so on. So, but this is how you work this thing that you're going to be in, because I was the only black person in an all white show. So you don't have to worry about, he said, their eye will naturally go to you. So just be real. You don't have to go over the top or any other.
That's the same dynamic that we're talking about with Joe Glazer and Louis Armstrong here.
Yes.
Did they genuinely like each other?
Yes.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do. Aaron Spelling genuinely liked me,
mm-hmm.
you know, but I invited him to my wedding when I got married on the show. He never came. He went to Tweez's wedding and he went to Hervé Villechaize's wedding, but he sent me a big, beautiful, expensive gift for my marriage, but he never set foot, you know. I remember Gavin giving a party and he showed up at Gavin's house. You know, so there's some kind of dynamic that's in there that really we don't necessarily think about, but that's what's going on.
That kind of stuff stays with you, doesn't it?
Yeah. I want to prove my father wrong. That's what I really want to do. Mm. Yeah.
And it also stayed with Louis. It touched him deeply. It was the same relationship he had with Bing Crosby. They knew each other over 40 years.
Yeah.
Bing Crosby brought him on his radio show. Bing Crosby put him in the movies. He says in the play, that's my name up there next to Bing Crosby. And he realized for the 40-year relationship, and again, Bill, they liked each other genuinely. I mean, genuinely, they've done a bunch of things together. But in the 40 years he's known him, Bing Crosby also never invited him over to his house. And that hurt. I mean, that hurt him. Yeah. And he knew about the relationship. He knew there was this love relationship between them. I mean, respect and camaraderie and colleagues. But there's this thing that no, you're good enough. You're amazing. He says, Bing Crosby says that to everybody. I learned it all from Satchmo. But he never invited him over to his house.
Does Satchmo talk about this in the show?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. It sure does.
You also play Miles. So tell me about that. I mean, I understand that maybe not an antagonistic relationship, but not exactly lovey-dovey between the two of them. Miles Davis.
Miles is another dude, man. You got to understand Miles Davis, you know.
Miles. Look. Miles loved the way, and this is in the play, Miles loved the way Louis Armstrong played the trumpet.
Yeah.
I mean, he learned everything. He says it in the play, you cannot play anything today that Louis Armstrong didn't play 40 years ago, 50 years ago.
Yeah.
You can't, right? But he just didn't like the way he acted on stage. That smiling everybody, and that big smile and that, you know, and he just didn't like it. He said he jumped around like Jim Crow on a stick.
Yeah.
And there was this kind of antagonistic relationship. But when they're playing together or in the same place, Louis says, he smiled at me, right? But I know what he'd been saying behind my back. But it wasn't just Louis Armstrong. It wasn't just Miles Davis. It was a lot of Black performers. Dizzy Gillespie didn't like that way either. And Dizzy Gillespie, although Dizzy, I just watched an interview this morning, as a matter of fact, with Dizzy. And Dizzy respected Louis Armstrong to the nth degree, right?
Well, what's funny is when I'm 62, right? So when I'm coming up, I used to see Louis Armstrong on, you know, the Mike Douglas show or Hollywood Palace or whatever.
Ed Sullivan.
And I always thought of him as, you know, this great entertainer, like the Hollywood sort of thing. And then I learned later as I grew up and got more into writing about music, what a great friggin' musician he was. You know, I always thought he was just this guy with a horn who smiled and sang Hello Dolly, you know, but when you go back to the 30s and the 40s, so I got a great deal of respect for this guy, and I really understand what he innovated. I wanted to ask you both, really, as we draw close to a close here, about the, I can't imagine there are pros. Let's talk about the cons of doing this virtually. No audience. Ted, how did you direct him virtually? How does one do that?
Technology is so advanced now. I mean, Peter is in Florida. I'm here in Los Angeles. And they got a hookup where I am actually looking through the lens of the camera.
Wow.
So I can see the composition.
Wow.
And I approached it not entirely as a theatrical piece, but also cinematically. So you're getting more of a movie than you would normally get with a one-man show. And I'm using cinematic techniques to tell this story.
Mm-hmm.
So we had one scene where I was a bad guy comes into the picture, and we had Peter leaning back when he becomes the bad guy into the shadows, and then leaning forward when he was Joe Glazer. So that's all cinematic.
You can do that virtually. That's so cool.
Yeah, because you're seeing the actual camera lens.
Yeah.
So I can say, move the camera a little more to the left, or I want you to pan over to the mirror or whatever, you know, or we're going to shoot through the mirror to the, you know, character. Wow. So I'm very lucky in that I went to the American Film Institute and I learned all of this technique, cinematic technique that I could use in telling the story. So you're not getting, like some plays you'll get, you know, like waist shot for 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they never give you a close up or they give you one close up and then it's over and out. But no, what we did was cinematic. And I think that's one of the reasons that Peter chose me to direct him is because he knew my affinity for camera.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah.
And, you know, and real quick here, that leaning forward and leaning back moment, I never told you this, Ted, but it always reminded me of the Batman series, you know, because whenever the crooks were seen, the screen was crooked, right?
Yeah.
And then with Batman, it was straight. So you know, the Joker was always, you know,
Batman was always straight,
right? But they were crooks, so everything was crooked.
Wow.
It was great.
Wow.
But the thing is, you know, in answer to your question earlier, Bill, for an actor, you know, we are so used to that camaraderie. The stage manager is right there, your fellow actors are right there, the crew, you're in a set, it's big, it's broad. And for my entire time there, I was so sequestered. I was in this room by myself, a beautifully designed room, you'll see it, it's gorgeous. And it looks like it could be a dressing room at the Waldorf. right? But I'm there by myself every day. And the adjacent room was where I was staying. So my commute was literally 4 seconds. It killed me. Traffic sucked every day, but it was amazing. So it was difficult for me because I wanted that camaraderie. And then when we were done, it was like, okay, we'll see ya. Bye, Ted.
Yeah.
See ya.
Yeah.
And there was no one there to
over
hug.
And out.
No one,
yeah.
Right. No one there to hug. No one there to toast with. No one. But I tell you, the work itself was perhaps one of the most challenging things I think I've ever done in my career. And I would do it. I would do it in a heartbeat again. If Ted were my director, because there was Ted, with all my heart, there was this camaraderie, this system of working that I learned from that was at times frustrating because I couldn't understand certain things, or it was so demanding that I wanted to give Ted what he's looking for. You know, so I was a stage actor doing a film about a play in a set that's not really in a theater. It was in my brain was just wonka, wonka.
Yeah. And I think one of my fortes is because I'm an actor.
Yeah.
I understood his frustration.
Oh, sure.
You know, I understood his frustration because he would have to switch from character to character. You know, and I'm so happy that Peter and I, we had a rehearsal period. So he developed his take on Satchmo, then on Miles, and then on Joe Glazer. So that when he had to switch, he knew where he was. It was frustrating. He'd have to, you know, take that running start, but he would get there. And that's what I'm saying. I think you're going to love when you see Satchmo, because even though it's cinematic, he has nailed these characters wonderfully well.
Thank you.
And oh my goodness. I mean, and he would just switch just like go in. I said, don't forget Miles chews gum. Boom. He's right there, you know. So it was good. It was good.
And Bill, the thing about, and I know you have another question. I know you should close it. The thing about this man that I love, and I wish I could have shook his hand. Every time, and between you two in this interview, whenever that voice would come out of me, both of you smiled. Both of you smiled.
Yeah.
And that's the essence of Louis Satchmo Armstrong, right? That's what he did. He would smile, and he says it in the play. He says, even if I'm playing a gut-wrenching blues or singing a blues that is just about your woman done you wrong or whatever, right?
Yeah.
He says he smiles and makes you smile. And so that feeling of the blues, yeah, you feel it, but there's deep down inside, he said, it's got to be a good, there's something good going on. And he just makes you smile every time he performs. I wish I could have been in an audience one day to see him perform.
We're looking forward to this. Let's recap that Satchmo at the Waldorf opens virtually at American Stage this coming Friday, the 19th. Of what is this? February. Yeah.
February.
Peter, what's next for you? What are you doing after this?
Well, I'm currently, as a matter of fact, I'm in my station right now. I'm going to rehearsal. I wrote a play called Strange Courtesies,
mm-hmm.
about one family's journey to find truth and reconciliation in post-apartheid South Africa.
Yes.
It's a play that I've been working on for a long time. San Jose Stage is producing it virtually. They graciously asked me to direct it. I was humbled. And I said, thank you. I would love to. So we are actually in recording right now. So we closed Satchmo on Sunday. I flew back Monday and started rehearsal here on Tuesday.
Is that the one that was in the American play?
American Stage. Yeah. The Playwrights Festival.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Okay.
And then after that, I'm supposed to go back to West Coast Black Theater Troupe to direct Pipeline again. With at Nate Jacobs' beautiful theater in Sarasota.
In Sarasota,
Well,
you're coming down to do, by that time, we should be
a little bit better, I'm hoping. Yeah. But I will still be, we still will have COVID restrictions and quarantines and so on before we start rehearsal. And then it's in the conversation, but I'm hoping to come back to American Stage to direct Romeo and Juliet, which is in the summer. So lots of things coming up.
What's next on your plate, sir? Mr. Lang.
I've got some plays up on YouTube. I've got a play about Shakespeare during a pandemic called Shakespeare Over My Shoulder. And maybe if you look over my shoulder, you can see Shakespeare.
Yeah, I noticed him there, yeah.
Yeah, so this is a play. There has been controversy over the 400 years who actually wrote the plays. This is a play about Shakespeare, Edward de Vere, Francis Bacon, and Christopher Marlowe. Those are the contenders.
Yeah.
I've gotten a lot of books on that, and I integrated this into a story. And so you'll learn stuff about Shakespeare, about Marlowe, and all of those guys back in the 1400s, 1500s. So that's on YouTube. I've got The Tears of Shylock, which is another Shakespeare-themed play that has to do with immigration, because Shylock was a Jew and Othello was a Moor. Mm-hmm. And so it's a play that deals with them in Venice at the time. And so you can find those all on YouTube. Just type in my name and then the play title. And two other plays, Four Queens, No Trump, and Blues in My Coffee. Blues in My Coffee is a thing about Black Lives Matter. It's a play about Black Lives Matter. And again, that takes place in Starbucks, because I went along the Irish thing of having a story being told in an Irish bar, but today's Irish bar is actually Starbucks, because everything goes down in a man. You bring your computer, you do your homework, or you meet someone, or before you go to. So that whole play takes place in Starbucks. Wow. So those are the things that are immediate now.
Okay. For me. Before I let you go, can you give me an Isaac? Can you give me one?
There you go, buddy.
I told myself I wasn't going to ask, but you're such a nice guy. What the hell?
No problem. No problem.
L. Peter Callender, Ted Lang, it is such a pleasure to speak to you both. Satchmo at the Waldorf starts the 19th of February, virtually on American stage. And we'll see you all next time, I hope.
Good night, everybody.
From stpcatalyst.com.